This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Yes, it's back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back?
Final hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We'll get to our big two coming up in just a moment. The Morrow Midday Show is brought to you by Baker Roofing. They have been in business for over 100 years, and they're one of the largest, most recognized roofing contractors in the U.S. They provide residential and commercial roofing, and in 1915, Baker Roofing Company was founded on the promise of always good work. Give our friend Matt Johnson, general manager of Baker Roofing Charleston, a call, or head on over to bakerroofing.com for more information. Check out their incredible history and to see all the different roofing types that are available online at BakerRoofing.com. Over 100 years of always good work, Baker Roofing, bringing you the Morrow Midday Show each and every day. Exciting news today. We have introduced our new app. Not talking about a bloomin' onion or whatever else you like, your mozzarella sticks. Go to the App Store on your iPhone and download our very own app, so you could take ESPN Radio Charleston wherever you go, anywhere in the world. You can now listen to us through TuneIn Radio, online at charlestonsportsradio.com, through your Alexa, and now just simply on your phone, either online at charlestonsportsradio.com or the easiest way, through the app. So head on over to your app store and just search either ESPN Charleston or ESPN 98.9. And you can download the app. It works with Apple CarPlay. You can connect your phone to your car, listen to the radio station anywhere. You can find the podcasts on the app as well. So the show that is podcasted every day is available on the app. It'll be available for Androids by the end of the week as well. And also not only for right now you can listen to us on your Alexa, but also all other smart speakers as well coming throughout the week as well. So we introduced our new app today. Just search in the App Store ESPN Charleston and download the app and start listening now. And by the end of the week, it'll be available on Androids and the other smart speakers. I have an Alexa. I got to be honest. That's the only one I know.
And you can tell Alexa to play us now.
That's right.
Besides telling her to do, you know, profane things and see what she says.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right. But I only use my Alexa. I don't even know how to do have any of this stuff. People program it so like it turns off their lights and stuff. I don't know how you do any of this. I watched that movie Smart House as a kid back in the 90s. No thanks. I don't want a smart house like that. And then it's going to take over. And then Katie Sagal will come to life and and hold you hostage. So no thank you. But people use their Alexas to do these crazy things. I just have it play music and tell me the weather when I wake up. But now you can have Alexa play the Morrow Midday Show for you. So that's available. We have the app. You can listen on the website. I mean, so many options for you to listen worldwide.
And let's do some rumor control.
Okay.
Okay, the show comes on after us, Fan Talk, Bobby Harton.
Yeah.
And, of course, Blake is producer.
Yeah.
There's some word going around that, they're going to part ways. No, nothing to it.
Oh.
Whoever tells you that, you could tell them they got some wrong information.
Oh, scuttlebutt. He's just, when you get these divas, it can be very hard to work with, let me tell you. We had to open up the doors here just to get his head in through the door to be able to do the show each and every day. 843-721-9500 to join the conversation. We'll get to the big two at two in just a moment. But first, let's go to the phone. Super Dave is with us. Dave, what's going on? How are you?
All right. What's you up to, Mr. Luke?
Oh, just talking on the radio. What's going on?
I heard you deal with Major League. What are the little kids that play baseball and love it going to think with Dr. the baseballs that need to be done so they can win a game or cheat? I mean.
Yeah, it's not good. I saw somebody.
Why couldn't they find these players for doing that? They make this astronomical type of money. Why can't they really put a fine on them before they get caught?
Well, they finally are, it seems, at least they're saying, they'll finally crack down on it, but it's become an issue. It's been about 3 years in the works, and it's gotten to a point now where something needs to be done because they estimate that 80 to 90% of pitchers are doing it, and it really makes it so much harder on the hitters. That's why that part of the reason why the league is batting record low 230 this year. It makes it so much harder to hit when the ball has crazy movement.
And with I don't know what the ratings are right now, but you know, people are just about kneeling watching the baseball game, I would think.
Yeah, well, actually, you know, ratings are actually up this year for baseball, which is good, but it's undeniable that the product is not as interesting to watch today as it was years ago when more balls were put in play. Today, half of the at-bats end in a strikeout, and that's not good for anybody other than the pitcher.
Why can't they review these pitches if they're questionable? You know, like football play, referee blows a wrong call, and then why can't it be reviewable?
Well, because pitches naturally have movement on them. It's hard to decipher how much movement is being, you know, how much movement is natural and how much of it comes from the substance being used. But you can't be reviewing every pitch. Then no one's going to be tuning in. Baseball games are going to be taking 9 hours.
Yeah. And I was thinking, you know, the first baseball game's interesting. Football, I should say. Hawaii and UCLA on August 28th at 1 o'clock, I think it is. But I think that would be a good game.
You got that game scheduled. You'll be watching it. Looking forward to it.
I'm not sure where to be on unless it's ESPN.
It will. It is ESPN.
That'd be a good game. I'll watch that one.
All right. We look forward to it. I love watching Hawaii just because it's such a. Well, for one, they usually play at midnight. It's the reason why I love Pac-12 after dark. A lot of times now I'm traveling or we have our own game with the Citadel. So I miss. I'll catch up on the DVR, you know. But I get home and it's already. In some cases, depends. Home games, you know. Even when I get home from home games, it's already like 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock. Especially when we're traveling, you know. When you're traveling, sometimes I won't get home till midnight. You get home, you want to unwind, and there's football on at midnight, right? It's great. And Hawaii usually kicks off their games at midnight. So I love watching Hawaii because of the time they play, and also because of the offense. Right, they've always had good quarterbacks and a bunch of yards and points, and so I like watching Hawaii. They're playing UCLA August 28th, that Saturday, on ESPN. It's a 9:30 kick Hawaiian time. They're playing at UCLA, so that's an early game for them. For the folks in Hawaii, they got to get up a little 9:30 football that Saturday morning. UCLA will be an intriguing team this year. And Hawaii is just always fun to watch. They're never going to be one of the best teams in the country, but with that offense and the style they play, they're always interesting. I'm just looking forward to college football. I think there are some really interesting games early in the college football season this year, which will be appreciated. And there's one in particular with Clemson that we'll circle back to later on, their game with Georgia, because the SP Plus have come out with their estimates for the Clemson schedule this year. We'll circle back to that later on this hour. If you ever miss anything from the show, as mentioned, you can catch it on demand. ESPN Radio Charleston. Just search wherever you listen to your podcast, search ESPN Radio Charleston. Or you can listen online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Find the show's on-demand podcast there. And as just laid out, if you download our new app, you can find the show podcasted there. Download the new app. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston in your app store on your iPhone. For Androids, it'll be up there by the end of the week. But with that said, a lot of times we catch up on a couple of the big stories on the final hour of the afternoon. It's our big two at two. And so to catch up on the two biggest stories of the day, we haven't done it in a while. We'll get to our big two at two because the Gamecock season came to an end over the weekend. So too did an all-time great in basketball. Their season came to an end this past weekend. It's our big two at two.
The Big Two at Two, where Luke recaps the two biggest stories of the day right here on the Morrow Midday Show.
The Gamecock season came to an end yesterday. You know, they say the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. You could say that, I guess, for the Gamecocks, expecting different results offensively. I don't know what the term would be for me to expect that anything would be different. It'd be like if you were interested and a guy who's a flirt, right? And you start dating someone who is flirtatious. Then you get into a relationship with them, and you're very upset that they're flirtatious. Saying, well, the person, you know, that's who they are. That was the person before you met them. You should expect the same during the relationship. And I guess that's the best example I could come up with to compare this Gamecock team. I picked them to win this regional because, silly me, I thought they'd get enough offense. But that's been their problem all year. They can't hit the ball well enough. Why did I expect that to change in the biggest games? I don't know. In the two losses, the Gamecocks hit 163, and they struck out in 43% of their at-bats. The pitching did its job. The bullpen didn't allow a single run. The pitching was excellent all weekend. We knew the pitching was going to be there, and I thought they'd get just enough offense. Because their pitching was good enough, they didn't need a whole lot of offense. You know, four runs. That's not asking a whole lot. Can you score four runs? Can you score three runs? You could win a game. You could have won these games if you just got to about four runs. That's all. I'm not asking you to score double digits. The pitching will do a good enough job. But instead, the Gamecocks got a hit on only 16% of their at-bats in their two losses, and they struck out on 43% of their at-bats. You can't win playoff games like that. If you look at the last 20 World Series champions at the major league level, almost all of them were bottom 10 in strikeouts. They were all, except I think it's one. 19 of the last 20 World Series champions were below league average in strikeouts. Point being, in order to win the championship, you have to be better than the average team in putting the ball in play. You have to strike out less than the average team. Regardless of what analytics tell you, you can't just strike out and homer your way to championships. You could do that to get to the playoffs, but not to win in the playoffs. And that was the case with the Gamecocks. The Gamecocks had the second lowest batting average in the SEC this year. They hit, I think, was 250 as a team this year. No team, I saw a stat over the last couple of days, that no team has won the College Baseball World Series hitting that low. You need to be able to put the ball in play. And so the new analytics these days, and if you listen to the show, you know I've railed against this idea many times. Regardless of what the numbers say, it may, over the course of a long season, win more games for you, but you're not going to win championships by striking out. You still need the timely hitting. You still need good hitting. Put the ball in play. Two-strike hitting, two-out hitting. Runners in scoring position with two outs. And here's the biggest analytic. This is the number one analytic we should focus on. And when we say analytic, it's just a fancy word to mean stats or numbers. This is the number one stat we should focus on. And this is what I would say to anybody of the school of thought that thinks you could just homer and strike out your way to victory. There is a stat. It's a new school stat. It's part of the analytics trend. It's called BABIP, batting average on balls put in play. And in Major League Baseball, the average BABIP is 301, which means if you never struck out, you would be a 301 hitter. If you put the ball in play every time, you have a 30% chance anytime you put the ball in play of getting a hit, which we know 300 batting average is a Hall of Famer. If you put the ball in play, you will be a Hall of Famer. If you put the ball in play, you have a 30% chance of getting on base. Obviously, if you strike out, you have a 0% chance of getting on base. More like a 1% chance on a drop third strike. Doesn't happen very often. And the Gamecocks in the regional had a 286 average on balls in play. When they actually made contact, when they put the ball in play, they hit 286 as a team. That's pretty good. But the problem is, they did not put the ball in play enough. They struck out too frequently. And that's the big issue. You can't strike out 43% of the time. And then they had just the terrible bad break yesterday when they had runners at first and second, no outs in the seventh inning, down a run. Satterfield hits it hard up the middle. Looks like it's going to be a base hit. Tied game, right? Rally continues. They just got three straight hits to open the inning. And instead, it hits off the pitcher's glove. It looks like he catches it. Then he drops it. The runners don't know which base they should go to. Turns into a double play. And that was kind of, at that point, all she wrote. Right? That took the momentum. That took the wind out of their sails. And it's just been that kind of way. It was that kind of weekend, that kind of year offensively for the Gamecocks. When they finally were mounting a rally, when they hit the ball hard, when they put it in play, that's what it led to, that double play. And the Gamecocks had their season come to an end yesterday. Yeah, they got the good enough pitching. They got good enough matchups. They went up against a couple of starters. They set career highs in strikeouts the last 2 years. Old Dominion starter, Virginia starter yesterday. These weren't world beaters you were facing. They just looked like it against that lineup. And the Gamecocks, after winning 13 straight regionals that they hosted, have now lost two of the last three. Their season came to an end yesterday. It was a good year, not a great year, but a good year for South Carolina. You make it to the regional, you even won a game, you got to host. They were ranked for the majority of the season, beat Clemson, had some good wins in there. It was a good year, not a great year for the Gamecocks, and it's obvious what they need to work on moving forward. Improve the hitting. Improve that lineup. And put the ball in play more. Because on average, if you put the ball in play, you have a 30% chance of getting a hit. Not even getting on base. That doesn't even count for errors. That's simply batting average. You would be a 301 hitter if you never struck out. Now, just by putting the ball in play, you would be a 300 career hitter. Strikeouts do nothing for you. The Gamecocks need to put the ball in play more often in the future. Story number two is LeBron James, because we were not on the air on Friday. And so while I had the day off Friday, I saw a lot of people's opinions and thoughts and comments on this because the Lakers were knocked out in the first round and everybody's saying, oh, it doesn't matter. This doesn't affect LeBron James. I think it does. I think it was a bad look series for him. To leave the bench early in Game 5 was a bad look. To not shake hands after being eliminated in Game 6 with the Suns when the rest of your team did, I think that's a bad look. Right? If you're a leader of not only your team but of the game, you're supposed to be one of the faces of the league, you could sit on the bench until the end of the loss. Right? You could shake hands after and congratulate the team that just beat you. Be a leader. And then even after they lost, in the press conference afterwards, LeBron immediately pitching his movie coming out next month. To me, all bad looks. It seemed like once Anthony Davis got hurt, by the actions, it seemed like LeBron didn't care. Left the bench early, didn't shake hands in Game 6, talking about his movie next month. Seemed like he didn't really care that his season just came to an end. And now, when you look back at LeBron's time so far in L.A., well, year one, he didn't make the playoffs for the first time in, I think, about 15 years. Year two, yeah, they won a championship, but it came with an asterisk. And year three, bounced in the first round for the first time in his career. And on top of it, LeBron was injured in two of those 3 years. And when they did win last year, in large part, it was because he had that big break before the postseason to rest up. But this is the LeBron now. He's going to be 37. He's going to continue to be banged up. He's going to have other interests in Hollywood. And he can't carry the team on his shoulders on his own anymore. I don't think LeBron gets another championship unless they have some sort of Brooklyn situation in L.A., right? Unless he teams up with some stars. Or there's another bubble situation where he can rest up and Anthony Davis can make sure he's healthy and they can go on a run. And I said this earlier, there are a lot of LeBron fans in the media. I think LeBron is the second greatest player of all time. I don't have anything against LeBron. But just because he's a great player, I also don't need to, you know, defend him at every stop. I heard a lot of people after the Lakers lost saying, yeah, but, you know, Michael Jordan lost in the first round 3 times. Because it always immediately turns into a comparison between these two. So if we want to make that comparison, let's be factual. Let's provide some context to those stats, some nuance. Because yes, it is true, Michael Jordan did lose in the first round of the playoffs 3 times in his career. But would also be true to remind you that those were his first 3 years in the league. And LeBron, meanwhile, his first 2 years in the league didn't even make the playoffs. Michael Jordan never lost in the first round of a title defense. And go back and look at those 3 years he lost in the first round. It was to the number 2 seed Bucks. It was the number 1 seed Celtics, who won 67 games and the championship. And then it was the following year against, again, the number 1 seeded Celtics, who won the East. The Bulls were under 500 every season and were the underdog all 3 years. And if you know anything about the NBA, at least of that time, you know that Jordan scored 49 and 63 back-to-back nights in Boston. That season, second year in the league, coming back from an injury when the Celtics went on to win the championship. And it's why Bird said that that was God disguised as Michael Jordan. That's how good he was. So sure, he lost in the first round. But at the same time, it was also pretty impressive. And that was when he first entered the league, not when he was defending a title right later on in his career. The Lakers were favored to win this series. They were the favorites to win the West. They had a better roster this year than when they actually won the championship a year ago, which I think makes last year's championship look worse for them, the fact that they couldn't get out of the first round this year. So I don't think it's something so simple that you could just wipe out, right? Like a little smudge you clean off the counter. I don't think that's what this is. I think this is a bigger blemish on the resume, career, or legacy of LeBron James. And don't waste my time with these stories I read over the weekend about LeBron being only 80% this series. I don't want to hear it after the fact. Right? I don't want your excuses afterwards. You have to bring it up at the beginning of the series or when you're up 2-1 in the series for me to take it seriously. After you lose, don't tell me, well, because of, I mean, he wasn't 100%. What do you expect? Nonsense. Coming up, Julio Jones was finally traded over the weekend. When we come back, have the Atlanta Falcons actually have the worst offseason of any NFL team? Bill Barnwell ranked them for ESPN.com this morning. We'll get to that when we come back. It's the More Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Yo, what up?
What's the word, big fella? Everything's good on this end.
Hey, Luke, how's it going? Thanks for having me on the show.
Great show. You did a good job.
Hey, you're turning into rapidly my favorite person I've interviewed with, and I've done like 50 of these in the last week.
You've done your homework. I like it. I absolutely like it. I love that.
Another great thought.
You know, it's uncanny how you do this, Luke. And I don't know how you do it, because I do this gauntlet of radio on Thursdays, where I do all these different cities. Many of them need their hosts to have me give them some talking points. You hit all my talking points every week. It's uncanny how good you are.
Appreciate you guys being right.
Very impressive.
Shout out to all the people in Tulsa that support the show.
Tell your friends. Tell your friends.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Coming up, Julio Jones has been traded out of Atlanta. Now, the Falcons actually had the worst offseason of any team in the NFL. We'll get to that in just a moment here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. I want to tell you about Lyerly's Dry Cleaners. They now have their to-go service, which can pick up or deliver right to your home or office. So skip the hassle of the dry cleaner. They handle shirts, suits, casual wear, as well as curtains, comforters, and regular old household laundry. You can track your dry cleaning, see exactly when it'll be ready or delivered. Just call or text them, 843-377-6994, to schedule a free pickup. And here's the best part. Mention that you heard about Lyerly's right here on ESPN Radio Charleston and get 20% off your next order. Before we get to the Julio Jones stuff, I was talking last segment about not only the Gamecocks season coming to an end, but so too the Lakers season with LeBron James in the playoffs. I'm sure everyone's heard it by now. It made the rounds. We were not on the air on Friday. But this clip from LeBron in the post-game press conference after they lost, and he had to give his sales pitch immediately. I talk about, I think, reading the room. I know he was the one that just lost. But I think it's pretty cheesy to go to the press conference afterwards and pitch us on your new movie. Here was LeBron putting the sell on for Space Jam 2.
No, I think I'm going to play for the Toon Squad this summer instead of the Olympics. I think that's what that's my focus on trying to beat the Monstars. Or the Goon Squad, we call them now. So didn't have much success versus Suns, so now I am gearing my attention to the Goon Squad here in July.
That was LeBron after the loss. How about you wait like a week? All right, wait till the body is the body's still warm. You just lost. You got to tell us about your crummy Space Jam reboot next month. Which, by the way, reminds me, I saw this story over the weekend about this wedding in India. Unfortunately, on the wedding day, the bride passed away. It's a sad story and a crazy story that the bride passes away from a heart attack at her wedding in India. And so they take her to the hospital. She ends up, you know, being pronounced dead upon arrival at the hospital. And I guess the family then took the body back home afterwards. And she was actually in the other room. And the groom asked the sister of the bride to marry him. And they said, sure. And they went and they got married. So the woman he was supposed to marry passes away literally at the wedding, and he ends up marrying the sister as well. And the uncle, they quoted the uncle in the article I read, where he said, it was kind of like a bittersweet thing because we lost one, you know, family member, but we gained another. There was a wedding. There was still a wedding to be had. Very odd. I mean, couldn't you give it like a few days first? Couldn't you mourn the person you just lost before you asked the sister to marry you? They must have figured, like, well, we don't want to come back. Right? I took vacation time to be at this wedding. You're going to make me come back in a few weeks for another wedding? Let's just do it now. We already bought, you know, we already paid for the food and the photographer and all the flowers and everything. Why don't you just step in? Maybe the sisters look alike. Maybe they passed it off to everybody that was actually the original bride that was still alive. 90% of marriages in India are arranged. So maybe that was something at play here. I don't know. But I saw that story over the weekend. I thought, man, could you wait a few days? The body was still warm in the next room, literally. The original bride was in one room of the house. He proposed to the sister in another room of the house the same day. They get married. LeBron, could you wait a little while to sell us on Space Jam 2? You just lost in the playoffs. Show that make us believe you cared. Julio Jones was traded out of the away from the Atlanta Falcons officially in the past 24 hours. Where does that put the Falcons in terms of off seasons this year in the NFL? Because Bill Barnwell of ESPN.com put this article out. He updated it after the Julio Jones trade in the last 24 hours. He ranked teams by their off seasons. He has the Raiders as having the worst offseason, followed by the Green Bay Packers at number 30, therefore the third worst offseason. That would be the Steelers. There they are, the Pittsburgh Steelers. Then you have the Houston Texans at 29 and the Atlanta Falcons at 28. So that would be the fifth worst offseason. According to Bill Barnwell, just one man's opinion, though I tend to agree, he said what went right? The hire of Arthur Smith and getting Dean Pease to be the defensive coordinator. I agree. I said that earlier. I like those moves. That's kind of where the offseason stopped for me. I haven't really liked the moves since then. Bill Barnwell said, in regards to the Falcons, what went wrong, brutal cap situation. Forced the Falcons to let some veterans leave, like Neil and Mack, and then forced them to have to trade Julio Jones. You can't blame Terry Fontenot. He took over that situation. Right? Thomas Dimitrioff left him a bad situation. It was almost like he was trying to set it up. It's like the person that, they know they're going to get fired, and so they set up something to sabotage the next person who's going to replace them. They delete all their files or something. They booby-trap the office. Right, that was almost like Dimitrioff. He got canned, and on his way out, he left a mess for his replacement, Terry Fontenot. What Barnwell said could have been done differently was handle the salary cap differently. Whether it was restructuring somebody like Grady Jarrett's contract, maybe not restructuring Matt Ryan's contract, but as he said, those decisions made in the last couple of months led up to the point where in the draft you're not taking a quarterback because you already have Matt Ryan, and it led to the point where you have to trade Julio Jones for the cap relief. Maybe you could have done a better job to avoid this situation salary cap-wise, but now you have committed only further to Matt Ryan. These are many of the things I've been saying. Bill Barnwell must be a fan of the show. He has been on the show a couple of times. And then, as he said, what's left to do now is extend Calvin Ridley. You lost Julio Jones. You did draft Kyle Pitts, but keep Ridley around because he could be your next Julio Jones. According to Barnwell, the Falcons had the fifth worst offseason, and in large part because of the decisions they've made to handle the salary cap. They decided to go in on Matt Ryan, get a Kyle Pitts, and yet still have to turn around and trade Julio Jones. Next on the list was the Rams at 27, and then you get to the Carolina Panthers at 26, which means they had the seventh worst offseason. According to Bill Barnwell, what went right for the Panthers was the moves they made on defense, adding a Hassan Reddick, an A.J. Bouye, trying to bolster that defense that needs some help. But in regards to the Panthers, what went wrong? Well, Barnwell is not a fan of the Sam Darnold trade. I am more of a fan of the Sam Darnold trade. I think there's a chance it could work out. He thinks that's where the Panthers went wrong, is putting their eggs in the basket of Darnold and giving up assets to have the ability to do so. Bill Barnwell said, in terms of what the Panthers could have done differently, he's not as high on the J.C. Horn pick at number 8. He believes the Panthers would have been better off either drafting a Justin Fields, and then you wouldn't have to have traded for Sam Darnold, or trading out that pick. Because you saw what the Giants were able to get when they traded out for the Bears so that the Bears could come up and take Justin Fields. What if the Panthers did that at number 8? For a team that is still, rebuilding, you could use some more draft picks. So Barnwell wasn't so high on the J.C. Horn pick. And lastly, what's left to do, he said, extend Taylor Moton, the right tackle. Because especially now with Sam Darnold, you got to take care of your quarterback and you got to build that offensive line. So according to Bill Barnwell, the Falcons had the fifth worst, or so far have had the fifth worst offseason, including now after trading Julio Jones, and the Panthers the seventh worst. I agree with pretty much everything he said about the Falcons. I disagree with the Panthers on both. I think J.C. Horn, I think, will work out. I get his idea. I get his thought process. But I like the Sam Darnold trade, and that's what the whole offseason is going to come down to. if Sam Darnold proves to be worth it. If not, then you look back and say, like, man, they traded for this guy? Not only did they not need to trade for him, but then they could have got a Justin Fields in the first round of the draft. The Panthers instead are taking their chances that a duo of Sam Darnold and J.C. Horn will be more valuable than just a Justin Fields. If Fields works out to be a franchise quarterback and Darnold bottoms out, that will not be true. But if Sam Darnold is at least good enough and J.C. Horn turns into, say, a Pro Bowl cornerback, then yes, maybe it'd be worthwhile. But franchise quarterbacks come with such a value that it may be worthwhile to go all in on a quarterback instead of getting yourself a lesser quarterback with a good defensive player as well. Julio Jones is on his way to Tennessee. Ryan Clark was on Get Up this morning talking about the Titans. I gave you my winners and losers from this trade earlier, and I said the Titans are a winner, but I don't know if they're as big of a winner as many believe. In fact, their odds haven't changed whatsoever in Vegas. And here was Ryan Clark on Get Up this morning talking about exactly that. But this is a good addition for the Titans. We'll find out, though, how big of an addition this becomes.
They got the most imposing-looking offensive bust. Let's not forget that they can't stop people yet. But when you think about what this team can do from an offensive standpoint, one, they absolutely scare you physically, right? If you're a DB, if you're a safety, if you're a nickelback, and you understand the type of physicality that you'll be facing from this offense, you already know that Friday is going to have to be no shirt Friday, and you're going to have to get the curls for the girls and get some triceps done so you can see yourself look swole in the mirror just so you walk into the stadium with some confidence. But then it comes the actual play on the field. Like, who do you double? Where do you send the safety to? How many people do you have in the box to stop Derrick Henry? You thought this team was prolific and Ryan Tannehill was prolific in play action pass before. This just takes it to another level. This will be a team that will be difficult to scheme, but impossible to truly stop. And this is a huge move, but is this team a receiver away from a Super Bowl? I'm just not sure.
Ryan Clark talking about the Titans after they acquired Julio Jones. If you missed my winners and losers from that deal, you can find it on demand. However you listen to your podcast, search ESPN Radio Charleston. Find the podcast online at charlestonsportsradio.com at our show page. Or now you can download our app, and the podcasts are available there. Just search ESPN Charleston in the App Store. When we come back, how much of a cakewalk will Clemson's schedule be this year? Because we now have the numbers and projections. We'll get to that when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, how easy will Clemson's schedule actually be this year? And how well or poorly will the Gamecocks match up with them in year one of Shane Beamer? It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Are you stuck in your current position with no room to grow? Are you underpaid, undervalued, overworked, maybe just need a new job? If you're any of those things, you can call Kearney & Son 72 Degrees Air Conditioning and Heating. They're local, family-owned. And Kearney & Son values family time and has done so for over 37 years. They believe you should earn while you learn, and they have training programs to get you where you want to be in your career today. They're now hiring full-time positions, optional four-day work week. Benefits include insurance, 401k plan, paid time off, and vacation, plus a signing bonus up to $5,000. So call Kearney & Son, 72 Degrees, and start taking your career to new heights while still having time for the most important thing, your family. Call them at 843-762-4304, Kearney & Son, 72 Degrees Air Conditioning and Heating. Before we get to Clemson, let me just say this. Because I've heard Mike Greenberg say it multiple times on his show, Greeny, which you can hear before we come on the air each and every day. I've heard other people say this. I think it's a little bit of being a prisoner of the moment. Jacob DeGrom of the New York Mets pitched another gem over the weekend. His ERA right now is 0.62. He is fantastic. Best pitcher in the game, no doubt. This is not the greatest stretch in baseball history. It is not the greatest stretch we've seen, because I know Greeny is older than me, and that's what I've heard him say, that this is the best pitching he has ever seen. It is not true. That is recency bias. This does not match what Pedro Martinez was doing 20 years ago. You have to compare the two eras. right? Bob Gibson's the third one. When you look at the numbers, this year for DeGrom is right there with Pedro and Bob Gibson as the three most impressive performances we have ever seen on the mound. However, for Bob Gibson, pitching was so dominant back then, they had to change the mound. That's the context there. DeGrom has been so dominant this year, baseball is at an all-time low in batting average, not just him, but other pitchers in the league. We're at an all-time low in batting average, and they're trying to change rules to help the hitters. But when Pedro was at his best, it was at the height of the steroid era. And I went back and looked to compare, and I took 2000 because that was the best year for Pedro and compared it to this year. And back in 2000, the league average for batting average was 275. This year it's 230. It's not even close. In 2000, on average, we had more homers per game. We had 50% less strikeouts per game than we do this year. So don't compare Jacob DeGrom. You can't just compare raw numbers. Additionally, in 2000, that was the year that the AL ERA champ won by the largest margin. Pedro's earned run average was under 2 that year. Second was Clemens at 3.7. And that's the most important part. How do they compare to the rest of the league? Go back and look. Bob Gibson had a fantastic year, but there were 7 pitchers that year with an ERA below 2. Pitchers dominated. This year, Jacob DeGrom is incredible, but you also have Trevor Bauer with a 2 ERA, and you have, you know, John Means and this guy and that guy. So many ERAs under 3. But however, you go back to 2000 for Pedro, his ERA was below 2. Second in line was Clemens at almost 4. There were only a couple of guys below 4 because that was the height of the steroid era, and offenses were wild. And yet, DeGrom averages to allow more homers per 9 innings now than Pedro did back then. And strikeouts are pretty comparable, even though guys struck out less back then. So you need, again, some of that context, some of that nuance. We can't just sit here and say, well, Michael Jordan lost in the first round 3 times. LeBron only did once. Yeah, okay, well, LeBron also missed the playoffs. Jordan never did, and Jordan was an underdog in those series that he lost. LeBron was a favorite, just like this. Yeah, DeGrom, on paper, his numbers are incredible. But go back and look at how much better Pedro was than his peers at the time. Compared to DeGrom now, that gap isn't as wide. There are other pitchers having great years. Nobody was in 2000 when Pedro was doing this. And there was a 7-year stretch. From 97 to 2003, Pedro was 118-36 with a 2.2 ERA in the middle of the steroid era. Yes, I'm a Red Sox fan, but I also don't think it's me being a biased Red Sox fan to say that is the best stretch of pitching. DeGrom will need to do it. He's done it for a couple of years. He'll need to pitch like this for 7 years. A 2.2 ERA over 7 years during the steroid era for Pedro. In the AL, not the NL. He's not facing a pitcher. He used to face DHs. Pedro's run was more impressive, as good as DeGrom is. That's not to take anything away from him. It's DeGrom, Bob Gibson, and Pedro right now as the three best stretches we've seen on the mound. Okay, with that said, I just had to get that off my chest. Clemson, as we get ready for the upcoming football season, Bill Connolly, friend of the show, is in charge of the SP Plus rankings in college football. It's an analytical-based service, if you will, that projects what is going to happen this year. And it's all numbers-driven. So he's going through his season previews, and he got to Clemson over the weekend. And he put out their schedule as the SP Plus season. So, of course, the toughest game is the very first one against Georgia. Clemson is favored to win all of these games, as you would imagine, according to SP Plus. Their tightest game is against Georgia, where they are given a 60% chance to win. That seems reasonable. I would pick Clemson, but I do think it is close to a coin flip. So 60% sounds about right. The SP Plus has Clemson favored by 4.5 in that game against Georgia. Then from there, the next toughest game, based off of these projections for Clemson, would be at NC State, where Clemson has only an 85% chance of winning, and the spread, according to SP Plus, should be 18 points on the road. They have a 100% chance of beating SC State, 92 against Georgia Tech, 95 against BC, 97 against Syracuse, 94 against Florida State, 86 against Louisville, 95 against Wake Forest, 100% against my UConn Huskies. Clemson should be favored by 53 against UConn, according to the SP Plus. They should be favored outside of that Georgia game by at least 18 points in every game this year, including 33 at Syracuse, 50 against SC State. I know I'm throwing a lot of numbers at you. But most importantly, how does the SP Plus see the first year of the Palmetto Bowl with Shane Beamer? Well, according to these projections, Clemson has a 97% chance of beating South Carolina this year. and the spread, they would make it at 31.5. So year one of Beamer, and if you're a realistic Gamecock fan, you probably shouldn't be too surprised by these numbers. But the Gamecocks, according to at least the data, the Gamecocks should be a 31.5-point underdog at home against Clemson this year. South Carolina stands only a 3% chance of winning that game. Also, lastly, according to the SP Plus rankings, they have the Gamecocks as the 90th best team in FBS football this year. So in the bottom third of teams this year. Clemson, meanwhile, is number two, as you would imagine, behind Alabama. So, long story short, you want to talk about a cakewalk, right? Clemson doesn't have to worry about Miami or UNC during the regular season, and while they have to play Georgia, that is a very tough game to start the year neutral site against a top five team, starting a new quarterback, you know, essentially on the road. That's a tough game to jump right in. But after that, a whole lot of cake. All right, they got more cake on that schedule, more cake than a bakery with the rest of that season, where the toughest game afterwards is an 85% chance of winning, and it's on the road. The analytics say that Clemson is at least 18 points better than everybody else on their schedule. You get past Georgia, you're coasting to a perfect season and the ACC championship. And when it comes to that game against South Carolina at the end of the year, a 97% chance of winning, favored by 31.5 for Clemson against South Carolina. By the way, Clemson had Arch Manning, Peyton Manning's nephew, on campus this past weekend, and they offered him on his way out. He is going to become the biggest name in recruiting. He is believed to be the next star quarterback, just like his Uncle Peyton, just like his Uncle Eli. We'll talk about this more in the show tomorrow, but Arch Manning is going to be almost like that white whale. Everyone is going to be after him. Obviously, only one school can get him. How does Clemson stand against everyone else? How well is Clemson positioned to try to land Arch Manning, who will be soon, if he isn't already, the biggest name in college football recruiting? When we come back, we'll wrap up your Monday afternoon. Floyd Mayweather got back in the ring to take on some YouTuber. We'll wrap up with that next. The Morrow Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, Floyd Mayweather was back in the ring over the weekend. It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. If you ever miss anything from the show, as we put a funky finish on your Monday afternoon, if you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Now there are so many ways to listen to the show, not only live, but anytime you want. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcast, or head on over to charlestonsportsradio.com, where there you can find our show podcasted right at the Morrow Midday Show page. And how about this? Another option for you in case that's not enough. You can now download our new app. Just search ESPN Charleston in the App Store of your smartphone, and the podcasts are available on that app. You could search ESPN Charleston. You could search ESPN 98.9. You could find it that way. To my knowledge, it's available certainly on your iPhone. I already have downloaded the app. And as I understand, it'll be available on Androids by the end of the week. So you can also listen to the show podcasted on the app. And you could take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go by simply streaming us online. Again, many of those same places. CharlestonSportsRadio.com, TuneIn Radio, your smart speaker, or our new app. And appreciate listeners checking in from at least 8 different states on this Monday and multiple countries, including listeners in Algeria on their time this Monday evening where they are. So I appreciate you hanging with us on this Monday. Okay, before we go, Floyd Mayweather got into the ring last night with one of the Paul brothers. I think it was Logan Paul. I don't know. I did not watch it, to be honest with you. I had no interest. But it is a spectacle, and they made all sorts of money. It was an exhibition, no knockouts. They went the full 8 rounds. Here was Floyd Mayweather in the ring afterwards talking about his return to the ring in this exhibition fight against some YouTube star last night, Money Mayweather, talking about the fight.
You got to realize, I'm not 21 anymore, but it's good to move around with these young guys, test my skills, just to have some fun. Great young fighter. Strong, tough. He's better than I thought he was.
What'd you think about him? What'd you think about Logan Paul? He says he wants to take this sport seriously. What do you think about him?
As far as with the big guys, the heavyweights, it's going to be kind of hard. But he's a tough, rough competitor. It was, you know, good action, have fun. And I was surprised by him tonight. Good little work. Good guy.
Did you enjoy?
Oh, yes, I had fun. I just want to thank all the fans that came out. You guys are unbelievable. To all the fans that bought pay-per-view, thank you. Tonight was a fun night.
Mayweather after the fight last night and the big payday. And he's speaking at a conference down there in Miami tomorrow where the fight was. And we all, this whole thing was a money grab. He called it before the fight. He called it, legalized robbery, something like that. That's all it is, because he knows people are going to pay $50 for this thing on pay-per-view. It was an exhibition, no winner, no knockout. And it was a classic Mayweather fight, from what I understand. Logan Paul threw more than twice as many punches, yet Mayweather connected on about three times as many of his. Typical Mayweather fight. He throws fewer punches, and yet he's more efficient and more accurate than whoever he's going up against. But from what I heard, I had friends watching. They were giving the play-by-play. I saw highlights afterwards. Mayweather tried in the middle couple of rounds, but otherwise just coasted to that payday. And Logan Paul able to go 8 rounds in an exhibition with Money Mayweather in his return to the ring. He would not commit to any future fights, including exhibitions, afterwards. But we know if that price tag's big enough, Mayweather will be there. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand, ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. Life is a series of hellos and goodbyes. For now, we have to say goodbye. We'll say hello again tomorrow at noon. It's the More Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.